Ian, why don't you tell us how Ian and the Dream got started?
Well, me and the bass player Chivo have known each other forever. It was about middle school when he came knocking at my door when he moved into our neighborhood. And he came up here from Naperville, Illinois to Waukesha, Wisconsin, knocked at my door and kind of got me out of the house. I was kind of the geeky kid holed up in his recording studio in his room making music. And then the new neighbor, bass player Chivo, rings my door, and we kind of started this friendship that's lasted ever since. And in 2008, we put together Ian and the Dream, and we added drummer Brian Farver to the picture, and we've been going strong with a couple EPs and a full-length record and loving it.
Now, you guys were in the Pepsi talent search, right? At 13?
Oh, God.
You won that.
Yeah, that's right. That was one of my first, cool festival showbiz experiences, so to speak. the Summerfest Pepsi Talent Search. That was a cool thing. I don't think they do that anymore, but this nice contest. Yeah, at the time it was this great opportunity. You submitted a demo tape and then you did a live showcase, and they chose me to the finalist play at Summerfest, and I won. So I got some recording studio time and voice lessons. Yeah. It was pretty neat.
Yeah. And I remember those too. I mean, those were a big deal. I mean, they even had the entry details on the cans, if you remember all that stuff, they went all out. And it was huge. This is right on the heels of American Idol and all that other stuff. So, as far as all that goes. But what I want to know is, I was listening to your music, and you guys sound way more experienced and older than you actually are. Were you in high school like less than 10 years ago?
You hit it pretty much right on the mark.
Oh my God. You guys sound like a seasoned combination of a well-honed group of songwriters, and a well-traveled band, and you have an almost Ben Folds Five vibe to you.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's funny. A lot of the people on SoundCloud have kind of made that comment lately on a couple tunes, and hey, that's cool. I mean, I know both me and drummer Brian and the band are big Ben Folds Five fans, mm-hmm. and our manager Steven, who produced our band's first two albums, is a Ben Folds song that's written about him. It's called Steven's Last Night in Town. it's on the same album as Brick and all those other big hits. It's a great album, and everyone should check out a little song on it called Steven's Last Night in Town. In fact, I'd highly recommend, YouTubing it and watching a live performance. It's just funny, the stories he tells about Steven, even though Steven hates it when he tells his stories, they're all just hilarious.
Nice.
But,
nice. Now, how do you, you started out with an EP first, right? And that was when the band, was first formed, correct? Roughly?
Right.
Now, being as new as you are at that point, how do you hone your songwriting skills as a group?
Well, that's a great question. I'd been writing songs for a long time since I was 10 years old, so I had this big backlog of songs. And Stephen Short, that record producer I was just mentioning, we kind of reached out to him, and, because he was a really smart guy who had won Grammys and gotten, young artists signed. And we reached out to him, and he said he likes the songs, so we kind of flew him in from LA to kind of just hang out with me at the house for a while and just listen to this big load of songs. We kind of worked together for hours. I'd play him little snippets of songs and he'd pass on some and then take interest in others. And then from there we just kind of formed our core identity. That first EP, that collection of six or seven songs, that's kind of what Steven thought was our core identity, the not only my best songs, but the good songs that at that time that kind of formed a nice cohesive image of what Ian and the Dream sounds like.
Yeah. Now, I mean, getting Steven Short at that early in your career is no laughing matter and is no small feat. I mean, the guy's been around, to say the least. Mm-hmm. How did you pull that off? Because he's worked with ex-Beatles. you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, the fact that he used to own Trident Studios and work with ex-Beatles, that was very appealing to me because I love the Beatles, of course. But we just pulled it off by reaching out to him, and, you know, we were lucky enough that he actually cares about, you know, artists that are working hard, and, you know, he listened to the music, and basically, you know, he said, I like the songwriting and the voice, and we should try it out, so... But, yeah, we just were fortunate enough to get a response. But sometimes you just have to put yourself out there and reach out to people and see what happens.
Now, was it intimidating? I mean, being, you know, like your first time out, you get somebody like that. Were you guys, like, nervous at all? Or?
Oh, well, you know, the funny thing was, he was very... there was never any feelings of nervousness or animosity or anything. He actually flew out here to my house, home studio in Waukesha, three times, maybe it was even four, it was three or four times for pre-production before he took us to the studio, and that was all very pleasant. And then when the nerves come in is when we actually went to the studio in Texas to cut the tracks. That's when he really started to be really hard on me, almost out of the blue. And I was kind of wondering, oh no, what the hell did I do? But it was just, it was one of those things, and then his fiance came in, flew into Texas to do a photo shoot for us. And she kind of was taking us aside and asking, oh, is he being really hard on you? She's like, don't worry. He does it to everyone to see if they can cut it. And I was kind of relieved by that. I was like, okay, that takes a little bit of the pressure off.
So he's trying to get the best out of you, basically, it sounds like.
Oh yeah. He's just excels at that. I mean, that's what every good record producer is supposed to do, right? Is to get that best performance out of you.
So he didn't do anything intimidating, like take his, you know, like at when, you know, at when you asked him for references, he didn't put his Grammy on the table, say, there's my reference, pal, let's get to work, or anything?
Oh, no, no. No, he's very humble. He would never flaunt his awards like that. In fact, he always downplays all his achievements. He's such a gentle, humble guy. But, no, I guess as intimidating as it got where it was, you know, the fact that when it came time to do vocals, you know, which really is the most important part of a record, especially in pop. I mean, you know, when it came to do that, it was just kind of funny because it was then, okay, everyone out of the studio, no engineer, no bandmates, no visitors, no anything, just him and me. And that's when stuff kind of got real, you know.
Nice.
And he would, you know, really push me to do my best vocal takes. So, but no, it was nothing like Phil Spector crazy bringing guns in the studio.
Yeah. Like, yeah, guns going off, then you guys all get Chinese food and stuff, and you know.
Right, but, right.
Well, how has the songwriting process and the recording process changed from then to now? Because you've got a new album, you know, that's Fermented Now. Let's talk about that. What are the differences between then and now?
Well, then we were working in a world-class facility, you know, the world's largest residential recording studio, you know, with all this just very expensive gear, right? And it cost a lot to make. And now we kind of took what we learned from that. And since Steven's been suffering from colon cancer and you know, battling quite strongly, I might add,
yeah.
We've just been working independently at my home studio. So I kind of took everything that I learned from him and, you know, put it to use. So with very minimal equipment in a very, you know, less ambient room, and we're producing records and, you know, doing our best to match the sound of what we did down there, just using what I learned from Steven. So that's how we cut our last record. And, yeah.
Now the differences do you see, excuse me, between the two processes, do you see benefits in the way you're doing it now? Because one benefit I see is that you have more time to think about what you're doing.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true. The first EP was very much a process of trusting Steven, you know, in the mixing process, in the, you know, the editing process and everything else, and just kind of him throwing a lot of ideas at us that were brand new on the spot while in the studio that we never even went over in three or four sessions of pre-production. It's like, whoa, all of a sudden all this experimenting in the studio, but it had to be done in a limited time frame, 9 days. But you're absolutely right. One benefit I see that you hit right on the head is just the ability to live with a song for even a few weeks, a couple months, and then be like, oh, you know what? This is the overdub this song needs. Or, you know, stuff just can, sometimes music can grow on you and hit you like that later, you know?
Now, now some of the songs that I've heard, like Kept My Heart Alive, Stepping on My Shoes, I mean, there's a varied texture to it. And I mean, it sounds like, I know we talked about Ben Folds Five earlier and everything. And I mean, it's obvious that they're an influence, but I hear a lot more, you know, from, you know, and I hear some Beatles, obviously, but I also hear some more obscure, influences like ELO. You know, I heard a little bit of ELO in there, and even, tell me if I'm wrong or not, but I, not vocal wise, because these guys are known for their vocals, but they're music wise, a little Bee Gees.
That's very insightful of you. I mean, yeah, definitely, I would agree. I love the Bee Gees, and I'm really into this one song of theirs that really never got enough attention. Fanny, Be Tender With My Love. I think it's just a great production. But yeah, they're a great group, and you're absolutely right about those influences. ELO, I mean, of course, congratulations to Jeff Lynne for his new Hollywood Star Walk. But yeah, he's definitely an influence. And you know, one thing I admire about him, of course, is that he's one of those do-it-all guys, you know, one of those Brian Wilson figures who's a producer and a writer. You know, not only is he a writer and the leader and a singer of this band, but he's also the boss in the studio, the guy who's producing and getting that sound. And of course, I look up to those guys because that's what I aim to do these days. Since I'm writing and producing everything at home, I can only try to be a glimmer in the shadow there.
Well, the cool thing too about what you're doing with your music, as the band Ian and the Dream, is that you're achieving a sound, and I mean achieving, because you've accomplished it. You're achieving a sound that is not out and about right now, but could very well be put in the forefront at any moment.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that, and that's exactly what we aim to hear from people, because you know, it's cool that, oh, thank you, I appreciate the Ben Folds comparison, but I don't want to be the next Ben Folds. You want to be Ian in the Dream, so I'm glad that you pick up on that. Thank you.
Well, how do you achieve that, with the music that's out now? Because, I mean, I'm a musician myself, and, like, one of the things I found hardest being a recording artist and being in a band was to be relevant yet original. It always seems like one, you know, if you're one, you're not the other these days.
Yeah. Well, that's true. And, you know, I think the important thing to remember is music is cyclical. And, you know, I always kind of believe in the Rick Rubin philosophy, you know, write what inspires you and write what you love. And, you know, that's why I've never really forced Ian in the Dream to sound, you know, like, oh, everything's keyboards now, no guitars, let's do no guitars. I mean, yeah, we had a one EP, Sad Into Stars, that was a lot more keyboard driven, but there were still some guitars in there. I mean, I never wanted to force the band to sound like something we aren't, you know. I mean, not to say that we sound like old influences like Beatles and ELO, you know, because we don't, but I just want us to be true to ourselves and write what inspires us. And if some of those modern, you know, textures, unique stuff work their way in on the right songs, then that's great. But, you know, we never want to fit anyone else's mold. I think if you really want to do something special, look at everything else that's out there, yes, and let it influence you, but also try to do something different, you know, that stands out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, if you could describe California Cauliflower, which is your latest album, in one sentence to somebody who's never heard it, you know, but you wanted to get across, you know, what it sounds like, what would that sentence be?
That's a good question. I would say, think of happy sunshine and positive healing energy.
That's true. It fits. You know, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I am one of those types of guys that's, like, into singles. Like, I rarely like a whole album. There's obviously exceptions, of course, of albums I could just let play all day long and stuff. This [S2] Sure. [S1] is something that I've listened to from first to last track, and I mean it's solid. You've heard the term filler. There's no filler in there. It doesn't seem like there's any music that was just in there to make the CD an hour.
Thank you. That's really great to hear.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, that we wanted to make a statement, our last EP was only 3 songs because we only had 3 days to cut songs up here with Steven for that second EP. So we wanted to make a statement, if we're going to put more songs on this record than our last 2 EPs combined, in a day and age where most bands are just putting out EPs to begin with or singles, unless you have huge budgets, let's make sure that it's a killer album. Let's make sure that it's a Rubber Soul, or a Pet Sounds, or there's no filler, So fortunately, again, we just kind of dug deep in the catalog. Some of it was new stuff that I had just written. Some of it was maybe a couple years older or a few years older, but, we just said, okay, let's open up everything. Even maybe a song or two that Steven might have passed on. It looks like, okay, maybe if we all believe in that song, what would Steven have done that made it better? And then, apply that thinking to the process.
Well, and I don't think I'm the only one that thinks that, because I'm looking at your SoundCloud playlist. I mean, there's some stuff that's pushing 70,000 listens. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen that by now. I mean, some of them. I mean, I can't even see the wave file or the wavelength because there's all the comments.
That's good.
So I mean, I'm not the only one seeing it. So, based on what you're seeing online, do you think maybe melodic pop rock is making a comeback? Because we're in the middle of a decade now, and that's usually when there's a shift.
Yeah, I'm excited about that, especially because one of my favorite bands, Weezer, just put out a great record, not too long ago, called Everything Will Be All Right in the End, and that was really... it was a comeback to their core sound. They knew they'd win more fans back that way, but moreover, it was just a good record, and it kind of, people were like, yeah, this melodic power pop rock is good, and, I believe it will make a comeback, because it's kind of like what we were talking about before, music is cyclical, and I always believe as long as the songwriting's good, then whatever way the music is arranged, that can phase in and out, but it'll always phase back again. There'll always be a good time for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got to ask you, with all the songs on California Cauliflower, if you could pick one and then the rest you had to throw into the fire, which would it be and why?
Oh, wow. Tough question. It's one of those weird things, because for me, music comes more naturally for me. And sometimes I'm challenged to come up with, a really, really strong lyrics, but I always try to do my best. So on California Cauliflower, I guess if I wanted to think of a song that had the best, music and words as a whole package deal, maybe it would be That's Love, just because, it's a very simple, universal message. It has a sound that's, very modern and in there, but also, true to us. And it hits on a lot of levels. So, and it's one of those songs, when we play live that people always, get moved by or want to go, over to the merch booth and grab that song and experience it again. So I think maybe there's something special about that track. Maybe today I would pick that one, but ask me tomorrow.
It'll probably be something else tomorrow. It always is. Well, I mean, another thing that I noticed, and I didn't even think about this till I read your bio, you guys are a trio.
Right. Sometimes we have extra guest musicians sit in, but it's, you're right. What were you going to say?
I was going to ask how you duplicate the sound of your music live, because your music sounds a lot fuller than a trio.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. I've always believed in the Billy Corgan philosophy or the George Martin Beatles philosophy or whatever, that, make a record, sound like forever. It's okay if you can't cover every little part live, but just just represented live as well as you can. So that being said, you know, you're right. Sometimes I just have to make choices of, oh, I'm going to play this guitar part, or I'm going to have Chivo sing this harmony, even though there's three or four harmonies, we can only do two or three, you know, at a time. And that's okay, you know. So yeah, we just kind of make up for that, those extra overdubs, by the energy that we bring to the table. You know, we kind of channel our inner Red Hot Chili Peppers. I mean, you see those guys jam live. You know, they really, even though there's just a drums, a bass, and guitar, the energy and the interaction between the three of them, you know, not only is it visually stimulating, but just the energy and the emotion they bring to every little note they play. So, and you can see it and feel it. So that's what we do. We just kind of, you know, we fill up the sound as best we can, and then we add that to it, and it just kind of, it all comes together and makes up for anything missing sonically, supposedly, I think.
Or another trio that pulls it off well is Rush.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Super talented. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, live they sound like more than three people. You know,
sure.
So, mm-hmm. You know, well, what can we expect? You know, if I went to an Ian in the Dream show, you know, what would I see?
Well, I think you'd see three guys, you know, really sweating it out and caring 100% and feeling every note. And, you know, we'd give you some moments, you know, we want to make you laugh with some funny stuff. We want to make you, you know, reflect, maybe be more serious and feel that universal connection with a song like That's Love, or and we want to entertain you. We want to just, you know, jam out and play some, you know, fun stuff that's entertaining to watch and listen to, you know, and show off the chops a little bit, you know, play some of that stuff and also break it down and give you lots of those dynamic levels, you know, some soft songs, some loud songs, but, you know, yeah, we like to take you on a ride.
Now, what's the crowd like? I mean, have you been getting good reactions for California Cauliflower live? Or
yeah, oh, definitely. It's one of those things where, you know, people, you know, when they see that we're into it, then they get into it. You know, so it's, but yeah, so far it's been received very well.
Nice. And I mean, you guys are going to be hitting the road like tomorrow, even, aren't you?
The summer will be pretty busy. Lots of festivals. We're looking forward to doing that, kind of kicking everything off here in a couple weeks, right in our hometown here, with a little Waukesha Friday Night Live, which is this pretty neat tradition, you know, downtown Waukesha, the hometown of Les Paul, birthplace of the electric guitar. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, we're looking forward to Summerfest too, of course, world's largest music festival. That'll be fun. And lots of stuff to look forward to. So me and the guys are back in full rehearsal mode and getting ready for that.
Which gig this summer are you looking forward to the most? Because, I mean, Summerfest is pretty big.
Yeah, you know, Summerfest would definitely be up there, you know, just because the crowd's always good and responsive. And it's just, you know, for us, it was one of those festivals growing up where it's just like, oh, who's coming to Summerfest this year? Awesome. You know, at least three, five of your favorite bands were there, you know, so we love those grounds. So yeah, Summerfest would be one of them. There's also, off the top of my head, there's another really cool festival called Bastille Days, kind of based around that French tradition, you know, storming the Bastille and whatnot. So they have a, you know, big 5K and, you know, everything in Cathedral Square kind of just closed down. And we're looking forward to that, too, because that was a lot of fun last year. So that'll be good.
Nice. Now, do you like playing festivals better than bars or venues? Or do you like playing the smaller indoor venues better?
Good question. I mean, you know, it really depends on the smaller venue. You know, intimate shows can be fun, you know, when it's the right, you know, kind of day and the right kind of energy. But yeah, I think overall the festival experience is just more fun for us, you know, just there's something about being outside and being in the open, you know, the energy is a little different. So the only worst thing is, you know, all the sunlight and seeing how to tune your guitars, but and all the sweat. But no, other than that, I think I would prefer the festival personally, but I don't know, maybe ask the other fellows one day.
Now, this question I've been wanting to ask you, like, since I heard your music, because you guys are so young, but you delve deep into music's past. So one thing I love to talk about on the show is the way bands used to promote before the internet and the way they promote now. Which do you like better? Do you like putting your music online, and do you like using Twitter and Facebook and everything, or do you have preferred it the old fashioned way, you know, with sending CDs to radio stations and all that stuff?
Well, I can only live in the moment. So I guess that being said, I subscribe to the, happiness is in the moment, be here now. So in that regard, I guess I'd have to say, that this is a blessing. I should embrace the internet overall. As far as being able to expose my music to on a greater scale and getting more instant feedback. So that's a blessing, and unfortunately some of the curses are in the transition of being weeded out. So the curse of, artists and songwriters getting less royalties perhaps, because of all these streaming things, that's all being sorted out right now legally, thank heavens. And yeah. I mean, I'm not saying I want to be, pay me big money. I'm just saying, you want to make something and seeing more than just fractions, of a penny for thousands and thousands of streams,
Oh yeah. So, and most artists I know have said the same thing. Like if they make enough to survive, to eat every day and to have a place to live, then that's great. Nobody, it doesn't seem like anybody wants to be multimillionaires anymore.
I mean, who said that? Who wouldn't mind? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, right? Let me rephrase that. I mean, they'd be happy, as long as they'd be happy if the, if and when the music supports them, and that's it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, in all seriousness, you're right. I mean, I'm doing music because I love it. It's just what I'm born to do. It's so natural to me and I love it. So, but yeah, I mean, that is the primary motivation and just to share it with people and heal people and lift people up from otherwise dreary lives, So that's the ultimate reward. And as long as you can make something at it, like you said, then, hey, you're right. I don't have to write a swimming pool, as John Lennon and Paul McCartney used to say.
Yeah, even though they had swimming pools.
Oh, sure. And then they'd still get together and say, let's write this.
Yeah,
something
exactly.
Bigger.
Well, yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you like being indie? Or if Virgin or Atlantic came to you tomorrow and said, we'd like to offer you our standard record contract and stuff, but then they kind of messed with your music and told you what to do. I mean, which would you prefer?
Well, I think that those aren't necessarily mutually exclusive things. I think that, when a record company notices that an artist has a good social media following and has good music and a good image and brand and all these things, then there should be a level of trust and give and take and compromise, just like in any relationship, I mean, I've never been afraid to give up a little bit of my artistic control to a producer who really knows what they're doing and, someone like Steven who's really been around, but on the other hand, would I want to completely forsake everything that of the identity Ian and the Dream is? Well, I don't even think any record company would respect a band that would want to do that and be interested in signing a band that's not authentic. So, I mean, that's a good question, but yeah, I don't believe they're mutually exclusive. And of course I'd be open to talking with anyone who can help us, take our band to the next level.
Because it was your music that attracted them to you in the first place.
What's that?
Well, because it's your music that attracted them to you in the first place, so there should be a level of trust.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there should be a mutual level of respect and wanting to work together to make something bigger and better. Absolutely, yeah.
Exactly. So what does Ian and the Dream have coming up? I mean, we know about the tour. That's going to last, I think, clear to October or November or something? And
Yeah.
So
we're setting up for those live dates and also just kind of tinkering around at the studio again here since you know, since I have some extra time and, you know, since I like to keep crazy busy
nice.
As much as I can. So, yeah, you know, and we always think the band that's not making their next record is, you know, probably busy dying if they're not on the road constantly. So in these couple months we hadn't been playing and we've been rehearsing, I've been, you know, just kind of tinkering around with that, getting some tracks together and working on the follow-up as well. So that'll be a while before that's all finished, but it's nice to have a good start on it, and ideas are just clicking left and right, so that's good.
Nice. Now, where can we find you guys online? I know you have ianinthedream.com, which is, it's always a good thing to have your own website, but where else can we find you guys?
Oh, sure. Well, all the typical social media places that are famous these days. so the, you know, YouTube, of course, and these are all /IanInTheDream. We're really simple. So YouTube/IanInTheDream, and then of course Twitter. Find us on there. We tweet a lot, and Instagram. We're busy on there. Busy Instagram bees, and of course the good old Facebook.
Although, and of course SoundCloud is your band.
Oh, thank you. Of course, yeah. That's one of our favorites because you know, we get to see all the comments in real time. You know, when a certain part of the track hits and someone comments on it that they really like that part or whatever. It's just really interesting to. That's one of my favorites, to see all the interaction on SoundCloud.
I've had a lot of artists tell me that they use SoundCloud to gauge what's popular or what works with their music.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, that's good. Let's hope it. I mean, they're doing a lot of things right, you know, SoundCloud. So I was disappointed that Groove Shark shut down. Did you hear about that?
Yeah.
It was one of my favorite streaming services. And, I mean, you know, of course, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but, you know, it's just, it's one of those things. But, yeah, SoundCloud is I think, could be going strong for quite some time. They're doing a lot of things right.
Yeah, especially since Twitter owns them now.
Oh, yeah. It's so, crazy how everything's always changing, yeah.
Yep, exactly. Well, thank you, Ian, for being on the show today, man. It was a privilege to hear your music, you know, and to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
So, is there anything that you've got that you'd like to say to everybody out there?
Oh, I would just like to say stay positive and, you know, be happy and do the best you can to really pursue your dreams, whatever those may be, and thanks for listening to Ian in the Dream.